This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural 1600 AM. I'm your host, Justice Neves, and I'm here sitting with Dennis Borges. Dennis, how you doing?
I'm fine.
All right, glad to hear that. So this is our first show of the Portuguese American Hour.
Yes, so, first of many, hopefully.
Yes, first of many. That's exactly what I'm hoping for. So since this is our first show, not too many people know about this or anything like that. Just go ahead and introduce yourself. Let's let the people get to know you a little bit.
Sure. Well, my name is Dennis, or Dinis in Portuguese, Borges. I was born in the Azores, which is an archipelago that is located in the North Atlantic, belongs to the country of Portugal. I immigrated here in 1968 when I was 10 years old, so I'm kind of dating myself already. That was a long time ago, and with my parents. My grandfather on my mother's side had immigrated here in 1910 when he was 18 and stayed here for 18 years and then went back to Portugal. My mom was born there. We came later. And so I was born there, came here, as I said, when I was 10. Didn't speak a word of English, obviously, than my parents. Or I had a younger brother. I have a younger brother who was 7 years younger than I am. And we came to the Tulare area, where we've lived in Tulare and Kings County basically ever since. I went to elementary school without knowing a single word of English, and actually that's how my name went from Dinis to Dennis, because they said, well, you don't say Dinis in English, it's Dennis. So it kind of, you know, changed automatically. It was a different time. It was the 1960s. And so I attended school here. My dad was in the dairy business. Portuguese Americans have been involved in the dairy business for a long time, so my dad was actually worked in the dairy, milked cows. I also worked with him ever since I was like 15. And I did been involved in the Portuguese American community pretty much since the age of 17. I got enticed into doing a Portuguese radio show for a buddy of mine who was going to the Azores. And that's my first involvement in Portuguese American community. I've been involved in different organizations. I taught Portuguese at Tulare Union High School for 22 years. And also at the College of the Sequoias, where I'm now in my 20th year, a part-time lecturer. And I've also been involved in an array of Portuguese-American organizations, including especially in Portuguese press. I write for a couple of Portuguese newspapers, one here in California, a couple on the East Coast, and two in the Azores, one in the island of São Miguel, one in Terceira. I'm a contributing writer. I usually write about two columns per month. I've published a few books about my writings are usually about the Portuguese-American community or things that have to do with the American society in general. And I was involved in various projects with Portuguese radio, with television, at Channel 49, where I did a half-hour television show for 30 years, and now with this new project at Fresno State. So my life, actually, I was just in Portugal for a conference a few months ago, and someone said, what's it like to be being Portuguese for you? Well, I kind of, it's who I am. Mm-hmm. Not in any sense of, you know, superiority or anything like that, but it's just that although I came here at the age of 10, mm-hmm. my life has been very much in the Portuguese-American community because of all the organizations I chose to belong to, all the things I was involved with Portuguese radio and Portuguese broadcasting at the time, because of teaching, then went to school, finished my degrees, and then my teaching at the Portuguese language is where I taught for 22 years at the high school. So basically, my life has been very involved in the Portuguese American community in one way or another, whether it be here in the Central Valley, but also with a few other organizations throughout Northern and Southern California.
All right. So. Covered it all pretty much right there.
I think so. Too much.
So you mentioned you came over when you were about 10, and you came straight to California and settled in Tulare.
Correct.
What was that initial, was there an initial culture shock when you came over? Because I know the Valley was where a lot of Portuguese Americans were. So was there a big culture shock? Was it not too bad? What was that like?
There wasn't too much, but there was some. I mean, you know, we came from a small island where you knew everybody, and even though there were other Portuguese Americans here, and my mom had two sisters, that actually three sisters, one had just immigrated just shortly before us. So my mom had family here, so we did have that family connection. However, once I went to school, I went to a little school in rural Tulare, now not so rural, which is Paulo Verde Elementary School. When I went there, obviously there were some Portuguese immigrants, sons and daughters, kids my age, who were also there in the same boat as I was. But this was before bilingual education, before any of those programs. And so I was just thrown in, quote unquote, in a regular classroom, you know, and a fourth grade classroom. And you kind of either sank or swam. And I swam, sinking a little bit now and then. I had a couple of people who were, a couple of young ladies actually, one in particular, Linda Martin, who was was born here, but her parents are Portuguese. She spoke Portuguese, and so she helped me tremendously in fitting in. So there was a little bit of a cultural shock. I mean, I had never seen a television until I got here in the 1960s because we didn't have television at that time in Portugal, so that was kind of new for me, you know. And in general, things were a little bit different. You know, we were from a small island where you knew everybody. All of a sudden, you're in a dairy where the nearest neighbor is like 4 or 5 miles away. There were a few other Portuguese people that lived in the dairy. They were milking cows like my father, but we didn't know who they were. So it was kind of hard in the beginning, but we managed to survive. However, immigration is not easy at any time.
No, of course. So like you said, you came over when you were 10. I'm not sure how much memories you can really create where you're at, but within the first 10 years, do you remember what it was like the first time you went back home?
We went back to Portugal actually 4 years later. Okay. My father had what they call in Portuguese, a promessa. My dad had a house in Portugal and some land that he inherited from both of his parents and a little bit from his from my mom's side of the family. But he didn't want, the economy was really bad in Portugal in the 1960s. It was very controlled. We had a dictatorship for government. And my dad didn't want to sell his property. So, and he didn't have any money, so he had to borrow passageway, the airline tickets, the money to pay for him, my mom, myself, and my brother. And he kind of had this promise that he made to himself and to a higher power, to the Holy Ghost, that if he was able to pay this off within a year, so he wouldn't pay a lot of interest to the person he borrowed from in Portugal, that he would go back and sponsor a celebration. And he was able to pay it off in 1 year. We were able then to control, basically pay some of our things that we had purchased here in America, And 4 years later, I was 14, we went back, and there was a real vacation because it was 5.5 months. So I've never had a vacation 5.5 months since then. But we went back for, like I said, a little over 5 months. And that kind of was important for me because it kind of put me in touch again with the culture I had left. I don't know if I had gone back when I was 14, if I would have been as strong into the Portuguese culture as I was. But, going back and connecting with some of the friends I had left, some of them had left like me, to the United States and to Canada, but there were still a few of them there. I think that was an important part in guiding me to becoming more and more involved in the Portuguese American community. Yes, indeed.
Okay. And how much had, if at all, changed within that 4 years from when you left and had gone
Portugal back? Had not changed much, unfortunately, from 1968 to 1972. Portugal and the Azores didn't change much until after 1974, so a couple of years after we were there. Okay. We had a revolution in 1974 in Portugal. They changed to a democracy. It was kind of rocky in the beginning, like all revolutions. But in 1976, so 2 years after the revolution, the Azores became an autonomous state. So like the U.S., like California is a state within the Union. Mm-hmm. So we began to have our own government. We have our own parliament. We had our own president of the government who came here to inaugurate the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. And so by having its own government, its own voice, okay, the taxes that were collected in the Azores stayed in the Azores, and we got help from mainland Portugal, the process of modernization started. But it was a total different country when I went back after a long period of time, because the age of 14 to almost 30, I didn't go back. Okay. When I went back, like when I was almost 30, then obviously it was a much more modern country than when I had left. When I left in the 1960s, and there's still the major method of transportation in the Azores was the ox cart.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So it was very still, very, you know, quaint, very kind of backward in some ways. However, when we went back in 1972, there were a lot more cars, but still the ox cart was an important method of transportation. But there were a lot more cars, a lot more buses. And obviously when I went back, you know, 14 years later after that, then the ox cart was just used in parades like it is used here.
Yeah. So since you're talking about the Azores, where exactly is that? I know you said Northern Atlantic. Sorry.
Yes, yeah, it's in Atlantic North. It's about 4-hour flight from Boston, from the east coast of the United States, 2 hours from Lisbon, so from mainland Portugal. There are a chain of islands. There are 9 islands in the Azores. They're divided into 3 categories. There's the eastern group that's closest to Europe that has 2 islands. There's a central part of the archipelago that has 5 islands. And then there's 2 other islands called the western group, and those the ones closest to the U.S., but I mean, they're all very close to each other. That is also 2 islands. Here in California, and especially in the Valley, most of the people that have immigrated, like my parents, like my grandfather before in the beginning of the 20th century, were mostly from the Azores, although there's some people from mainland Portugal and other parts of Portugal, the Madeira Islands. But the largest majority, especially in the Valley, are from the Azores.
Okay. And so we're going to fast forward here a little bit. And I know, like I said, you covered a lot. Being where you are now, contributing to Portuguese papers all over internationally. You've published a few books. You are the honorary consul of Portugal, correct?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's honorary means they don't pay me. So it means I answer phone calls and I help people as much as I can, but I don't get paid. But yes, I am. I represent Portugal in the Valley. Yes.
Okay. And then also a co-coordinator, sorry, for all Portuguese language programs within California, correct?
I was. I just, because of my new position at Fresno State, I am no longer that. But for 6 years, a colleague of mine in Northern California, myself, we co-coordinated the Portuguese language programs for California.
Okay. And then, of course, now just most recently becoming the director of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. Just real quick before we go to break, you know, I touch on that, what that meant to you.
Well, that's very important, and I tell you, it's an important mark in the history of the Portuguese presence and I wouldn't say just in the Valley, I would say in California, and it's the vision, obviously, of Fresno State President Joseph Castro, who has been an enormous force for this Valley, and his wife Mary Castro, Mary Borges Castro, no relation, but the same last name, and I think that. Once we began some exchange programs, this kind of started with the Jordan College of Agriculture and Technology, or Cultural Science and Technology, and a grant that we got from a foundation in Portugal, FLAD, Luso-American Development Foundation, to establish a exchange program between the Jordan College and the University of the Azores in the island of Terceira. That is, there are three campuses of the University of the Azores in three different islands. And the island of Terceira, one of their specialties is ag. So it made sense to have, you know, a working relationship with the Jordan College of Ag here at Fresno State. So we started like that. We did some exchange programs, and that worked really well. And then from there, the beginning of more courses that are now being taught, Portuguese language and Portuguese culture courses at Fresno State, not just by myself, but also Professor Inês Lima, who was hired about a year ago to teach Portuguese at the university as well. And then the creation of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. We wanted an entity within the university that would be kind of a hub for everything that is culturally, literally, you know, the pedagogical studies, research, etc. And that's what the institute is. It works with three different colleges, so that's kind of unique and special, because there's, you know, we're collaborating. So it's a product of the College of Arts and Humanities. It's a product of the College of Social Science and a product of the Jordan College of Agricultural Science and Technology. So the institute belongs to all three of these colleges.
Okay.
It works with all three of them. We have a lecture series and in place right now. We have a lecture series with trying to have anywhere between 4 to 5 lectures per semester. I know that's a lot. And also a Portuguese oral history project. But it was very important for me. I was just retiring from high school, so I guess it came at the right time. Now I'm no longer retired. My wife tells me that I'm working harder than I was, and I probably am. But the challenge is there. And the community has been very receptive. Fresno State has been wholeheartedly behind the project, and I think it will be very important for this multicultural aspect of who we are as a valley and as a state.
That's great. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will go more in depth on the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, so make sure you stay tuned on 1600 Multicultural AM.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Again, I am Justice Neves, and I am sitting with our guest, Dennis Borges, who is the director of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State, correct?
Correct.
And, just for anyone who doesn't know, where exactly is that located on campus?
Well, it's located everywhere because we don't have a physical office right now.
Okay.
But it is located everywhere you want us to meet you. We will have a physical office soon, hopefully. But right now, it's just, since it's the product of the three colleges, like I mentioned before the break, it's kind of good that it doesn't have a particular physical space in any one of the colleges.
Yeah.
You know. However, we will we'll have a physical space. All of our events are pretty much either done in the library in one of the conference rooms or one of the auditoriums, or we also use all the venues. We've used, you know, the different dining halls for conferences. We've used the Peters Business Center, the auditorium there for conferences as well. So we really. We really want to be part of the university as we are. And so we want to use all the different venues because it's kind of a way also for folks, since we're trying to connect to the community, it's kind of a way for folks to learn a little bit, even the physical aspect where things are at Fresno State. And kind of sometimes have an appreciation for the students who have to go from one end of the campus to the other for class.
I've been there before.
I know.
So just to recap, you said it was the College of Arts and Humanities,
correct,
the Jordan Agricultural Sciences, and
College of Social Science.
Social Sciences,
yeah,
that was it. So the institute actually was launched late last year in November, I believe.
The funding came in November, was announced in November,
it was
I should say.
November,
and then it was launched this year on February the 13th.
Okay. And then, so at the announcement for it that happened in November, once you found out you had the funding, Vasco Alves Cordeiro, who is actually the president of the government of Azores, right?
Right, correct.
Was at Fresno State and actually did the first lecture. What did that having him there, what does that mean for you in terms of, you know, you're the director of this mm-hmm. institute. What does that mean for you to know you're having that kind of support? And just what would that mean for the Portuguese community in general, having him come here?
I think for me, it was important. It was special. And I'm glad he accepted, you know, our invitation, mine and President Castro's invitation. For the community, I think it was really telling. I think it tells us and it told us how the Azores places high importance on their immigration and on their diaspora, the second, third, fourth, and even fifth generations. The Azores, there's a famous Portuguese writer that used to say that the Azores wouldn't be the Azores without its communities overseas. And I believe that. And I think by the president of the government of the Azores agreeing to come and launch the institute and give the inaugural lecture is a very clear indication that indeed the Azores does place a very high priority on those who live abroad, and not just those who immigrated abroad, such as myself, but like my kids and my grandkids, and so also those who are of Portuguese background, whether they were born there or already were born here, second, third, fourth generation. Mm-hmm. So I think it was very important. I think it also, I was very surprised. I actually had a kind of a little friendly bet with someone. I was very surprised on the number of people. These lectures, you know, the importance is that people who want to attend them. They're free of charge. They're for the students, they're for the faculty, but they're also for the community in general, mm-hmm. and whether you're Portuguese or not. And so we were kind of, I always thought, well, we'll be, you know, very, very happy. I would be very, very happy with about 150 people or so. We had over 300, and so it was a huge success, very, very big success, and the inaugural lecture and all of the other lectures. I'm always very pleased with the number of participants. I'm always pleased if we can get 50 or 60 people, and we haven't had any lecture with less than 100 to 125. So we've had some very good participation, and I think by kicking it off with the president, presence of the president of the government of the Azores, it was special. And it was special also because he made it a point to visit some other key points here in Fresno, mm-hmm. namely the county supervisors, where we have five supervisors and two of them are of Portuguese background. So it was kind of, you know, special for him to visit that and see that the Portuguese are involved, and to also hear from those two supervisors and other people who went up to him and talked to him, and I overheard a lot of different conversations. You know, people were saying, well, it was my grandfather that immigrated, but mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still Portuguese. I still have this feeling, you know, of the culture, the traditions, etc. So I think it's good for people in Portugal and the Azores to hear that even though one was born here and it was their parents, grandparents, or great-grandparents that immigrated, there's still something that connects them to the land and to the culture.
Yeah. So with obviously the President Cordeiro coming in, is the Institute primarily focused on the Azores or?
Very good question. Well, it's called Portuguese Beyond Borders because we wanted to mention that it's beyond borders in the aspect that we didn't want it to be just for the Portuguese community. It's for everyone who lives and raises, you know, their families and has their livelihood here in the valley, especially in the valley. We're concentrating on the valley. I think we're the first couple of years, and this is the vision also of President Castro, of Provost Saul Jimenez Sandoval, and that is we kind of need to focus on the Azores quite a bit because that's where most Portuguese Americans who live in the valley can trace their roots to. Okay. And a lot of them still, you know, have heard about the Azores but don't know that much about it. So we're trying to kind of, let's say, rekindle, you know, that spirit. And so I think we need to focus on the Azores. Every single lecture that we have had that focuses on the Azores has been in one way or another a success as far as number of participants engaging and people satisfied with what happened during the lecture. So I think that we need to focus quite a bit on that. And for example, when the president of the government of the Azores, as you mentioned, Justice Vasco Cordeiro was here, he gave Fresno State it was shipped later, we just got it a few weeks ago, a collection of 500 books for our library, and we are having them displayed in our library. The library staff is working very hard on that right now. And so we will have a complete Portuguese collection starting, there's already some Portuguese Portuguese books there, but there will be these 500 that deal with the Azores, books that are in Portuguese or in English, but all about the Azores.
Yeah, and then as you mentioned, the San Joaquin Valley is the largest gathering of Portuguese-American community, like you said, many rooted in the Azores.
Correct.
So in the short amount of time that the Institute has existed within this year since it got its funding, what kind of influence have you noticed that it had at Fresno State and also within the community?
I think the community is beginning to understand the importance of it. I believe that the lectures, you know, have brought, you know, different topics that, like I said, mainly related to the Azores, but not only the Azores. We've also had different topics about the Portuguese world and the Portuguese-speaking world. And Portuguese Oral History Project that we kicked off, that is also part of the grant that we received from FLAD, from the Luso American Development Foundation. We were able to have a summer institute to prepare people to do oral history. We have a group of people, about a half a dozen of us, who are working diligently on collecting that oral history. And then the MCJ department, media communication and journalism, is doing also some interviews. I believe so far they've done 8 video interviews for a possible project of a documentary on the Portuguese-American presence in the Central Valley. And so I think with the oral history, it kind of connects the community to the university, and I've seen a lot of good results from that aspect. I mean, it's new. It's only been in effect for a few months. But it'll be very interesting to see, for the first time ever, as far as the Valley is concerned, the Portuguese-American history being recorded, transcribed, and archived at the library, not just for this generation, but also for future generations. You know, we should have done this years ago. We didn't, but it's never too late, because we lost quite a few stories of the older generation that has passed on. But hopefully their sons and their grandsons and their daughters and their granddaughters can also still remember some aspects of their lives. Yeah. And we're collecting all kinds of oral history. In other words, it's not just the immigrants, but the Portuguese-American story, or the Portuguese-American experience in the Valley, is not just the immigrant experience. It's also the second, third, and fourth generations born here that have continued with this, with the traditions, with the festas, with the events, with the culture, with the foods, etc.
And that's actually a perfect place for us to stop. We're going to take another very quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk more extensively on the Portuguese-American community within the Valley and within California itself. So you're listening to Multicultural 1600 AM, the Portuguese American Hour.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the Valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour again. I'm your host, Justice Neves. I'm here with Dinis Borges. I want to try to work on my
You're
Portuguese.
You're putting that Portuguese Dinis in there. Yes, you do the Neves really well. Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you. As we're going into this, I want to try to work that in a little more. So we were just talking about the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, which then, you know, worked our way back into speaking about the Portuguese American community, specifically here in the Central Valley being the largest in California. And like we mentioned before, that is majority rooted in
the Azores.
I forgot that again. So I did want to ask, between mainland Portugal and the Azores, is there much of a cultural difference? Is it mostly the same? Because I know, obviously, other than geographically, they're in two different places.
There's not that much. Our language is the same. Obviously, there are some regional dialects that are different. You know, they're even different from island to island. But we are one country. We are basically the same cultural traditions. There are some traditions, for example, in the Azores that are no longer in mainland Portugal, because mainland Portugal being part of the European continent, and the Azores belong to the European continent, but they're a little bit further away as islands. The Portugal belonging to the European continent, you know, there's the evolution that goes on in all countries, and it happens, you know, in all countries throughout Europe. Some things, you know, some traditions that were very big in mainland Portugal, you know, centuries ago have died. They've been replaced by other things. In the Azores, they have not. So, for example, the Portuguese festas, we call them here the festas, which is the Holy Ghost festivals in all the islands of the Azores. They're still very big. I mean, every township, every freguesia, as we call it for township, every village, every city has a one of these events to festas do Espírito Santo. However, in mainland Portugal, there's basically only one place that still has them, so they've kind of died out. Okay. So there's some traditions and some things that have kind of died out in mainland Portugal because of the evolution process. But because we were so far away mm-hmm. for many centuries, it was hard to communicate. It's not like today with the internet and with smartphones, etc. Some things maintained themselves in the Azores far longer than they did in mainland Portugal, and now they're kind of part of the idiosyncrasy of the Portuguese, of the Azorean, I should say. There is definitely a little bit of a difference in kind of the way people are. Mm-hmm. From the Azores to mainland Portugal. And that kind of happens with a lot of areas that are islanders. So the Azoreans are islanders, and mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they live in islands surrounded by ocean.
Yeah.
So they don't live in a continent. So there is a little bit of a difference. One of our writers, Vitorino Nemes, used to say that to us, the geography is just as important as the history, because the geography shapes who we are in the Azores. So there are some differences, but they're very minimal. Today there are less and less differences.
No, of course.
There were more, of course, years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so one of the first things you mentioned there was language, and, you know, obviously sometimes it differs, like you said, from island to island compared
Correct.
To mainland.
Correct.
As I was doing a lot of my research on a lot of this stuff, and of course you've taught Portuguese language for your whole career. How big of a role does that really play in the culture, and is there a sense of pride
here,
around the
mean?
Portuguese language? Just, I mean,
there's a sense of pride. There's a sense of pride. Sometimes we think there's more sense of pride here than there is in Portugal, but that's just, you know, with the way the world goes. Here in the United States, and here in California especially, because we're such a we're not a very large group. You know, according to the U.S. Census, there's about 350. This is a census of 2000. There's about 350,000 Californians who say that they are of Portuguese background. And according to that same census report, only 31,000 said they use Portuguese at home. So there's a lot more that can understand you and I here than if you and I were speaking Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we're talking about maybe 10% of those who identify themselves as being of Portuguese background can still speak the language in California. And that just happens. That happens with all ethnicities. I mean, German used to be a language that was spoken by many Americans, you know, at the turn of the 19th to 20th century. It is now spoken less and less in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, English is kind of the lingua franca of the world. But there is a sense of pride here in the aspect that the younger generations of Portuguese Americans are really wanting their kids, because they didn't learn Portuguese,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them. And there aren't a lot of schools, elementary or high schools, that teach Portuguese in California as many as we'd like to have. That so there are quite a few private schools, Portuguese American organizations, who have like courses of maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours a week. There's some in Tulare, there's some in Turlock, there's some in Hillmar, and some of the listening area here of our area. These classes are usually frequented by kids who were, you know, born here, and their parents already born here, and sometimes even their grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's a sense of, you know, reconnecting with your roots. That's much more important for Americans today than probably was when I came in 1968. I think there's a very, very sense of pride. In Portugal, obviously, it's the language of the country.
Yeah.
There's a language spoken. There is, you know, a pride of being Portuguese and of being European. It always pleasantly surprises those visiting from Portugal or the Azores, the government officials and academics, when they see the sense of pride that people have in their ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they may not still speak Portuguese, even though they may not have a lot to do with the Portuguese culture, but they're all very, very proud of who they are.
Okay. And then I know you're talking about, you know, rekindling with the roots. And
Correct.
Again, like you said, you may not have gone down the path you necessarily went had you not gone back when you were 14.
I think so.
Like you'd mentioned before. So is that something you're hoping this oral history project can help with?
I hope so. I believe that the Oral History Project, it will give a sense of pride to the community. It will give a sense of kind of a justified presence at the university. Mm-hmm. Portuguese Americans have been involved at the university probably ever since its founding. However, you know, and Portuguese has been taught there for many years. A course here, a course there, not a complete, you know, program. Mm-hmm. But now with the new leadership of the last few years and this bold vision, I believe that there's a good future for Portuguese language and culture courses, and also for everything that's Portuguese around that, including the oral history. I think the oral history brings back that pride. I think it registers, and it sometimes, you know, lets you think of something that you thought wasn't as important as it may have been, you know. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed a few people so far for the Oral History Project, and when I was in broadcast, through Channel 49. My program was a half hour a week, every other week. It was two programs a month that I moderated. And mostly there were interviews with people about current events in the Portuguese American community. So this is a little bit different. This is just getting people to talk about their oral history, their family history, mm-hmm. or their history involved in the Portuguese American organizations. Because the Oral History Project is going to collect various different kinds of histories. The history of the personal history of the immigrants, the first, second, third, and fourth generation, etc., but also the history of the Portuguese festas, the history of the Portuguese soccer clubs that there are throughout the valley, the Portuguese bands, the Portuguese folklore groups. So we want to the Portuguese in agriculture. So we want to have that presence as well. And I think what this does is, you know, sometimes when you start talking to people, and I'll never forget, just a few weeks ago, I was starting an interview with someone this person asked me, why do you want to interview me? I don't have anything to say. And I knew he did. There was a story there. And then afterwards he said, you know, I guess my story is kind of interesting, isn't it? And so I think people sometimes, I think everybody has a story. We mm-hmm. all have our own story and we're all unique. And I think that we're all part of the American multicultural society. And I think it's time that the Portuguese have their stories, like other ethnic groups, registered and archived for this generation, for future generations. Mm.
And then, of course, the oral history is going to be a big step, I think, in helping reconnect everybody and making
Correct.
That stronger.
I believe it does. I believe it kind of brings you back memories of things that you may have not thought were as important as they really are, and bring back memories of who you really are as a person. Sometimes we do things unconsciously, and then we think back and we said, well, my dad or my grandfather or somebody in my family did this. Okay, well, I guess this is the Portuguese in me.
Mm-hmm. And so within the valley, like we said, this is the biggest gathering of the Portuguese American community in California. Is it a tight-knit community?
I think we are. We have our differences, as all communities do. You know, we have our brotherly fights. But I believe that, you know, we're geographically dispersed. You know, quite different than, for example, the East Coast, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, there are streets that are literally all Portuguese.
Yeah.
We are, and we've been really involved in agriculture. And so, you know, in the dairy industry, not just the dairy industry, but in various aspects of agriculture. And so, you know, we have been dispersed to different areas. But between Modesto to the north, basically, and Delano, Pixley area, basically, to mm-hmm. the south, there's Portuguese in every single town. The town that has the most number of Portuguese is Hilmar, which is a community north here of us. It's the most Portuguese town in America, actually, where 38% of its population is Portuguese. Now, Hilmar has, I believe, about 7,000 people, so it's a small amount, but at 38%, it's the biggest percentage of Portuguese, and it's the most Portuguese town in America. However, so I think we're proud of our heritage. We're proud of who we are. We're proud of the contributions, I think, that we have made to the American society. We're proud of the integration that we have done, and we're proud of the connections that we have with Portugal and the Azores and the Portuguese-speaking world. And I believe that I think we are a tight-knit community in a lot of ways. You know, the festas and the celebrations of the culture is an important part of who we are. Mm-hmm. And you won't see a parade with just one queen. The queen represents the festa. You'll see a parade with many queens. And so people from Tulare and Visalia and Hanford will travel all the way up to Gustin, you know, Interlock and Modesto to participate in this. So that shows respect for the culture and respect for what everyone is trying to do within their own community. Not to say that we don't have our, you know, brotherly spats, you know, once in a while. But we have to have those or else we wouldn't be, you know, brothers.
You wouldn't be as close. So again, perfect place. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, we will be giving you more information on all the events and anything you can do to become closer, hopefully, with your culture if you're Portuguese within the Valley. Again, this is Multicultural 1600 AM, the Portuguese American Hour.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the Valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Again, I'm your host, Justice Neves. I'm sitting here with Dennis Borges. And before we go into the events, like we said we were going to, there was one thing we wanted to bring up. The establishment of the Azorean Diaspora Council.
Mm-hmm.
That was shortly established after the Institute got its funding, correct?
Correct.
By, it was Cordeiro.
Yeah, it was actually announced by President Cordeiro the day after the Institute was launched here in California. I think it's a very special formation of an entity that will help the those who are of Azorean background have a voice in the Azores, and kind of the Azores also connect with the different resources. So it's, I think it's a way to connect resources on both sides of the Atlantic. The Azores are a small group of islands, around less than 250,000 people. Uh-huh. And so there are more Azoreans in the United States than there are in the Azores. So that's kind of an interesting fact. If you add actually, you know, second and third generation Azoreans or fourth, there are probably three times as many Azoreans in the United States than there are in the Azores. And so the group of islands dispersed in the middle of the Atlantic and the Atlantic North, there are obviously some resources are limited. And I think that Azorean Americans who have lived here for many years, you know, whether you are an immigrant or first, second, or third, or even fourth generation, you can contribute in a lot of different ways. And today's world is a global world, so you can be here and have investments in the Azores or in Brazil or in Mexico or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think the Azorean Diaspora Council will bring us together closer, not only culturally, not only emotionally, but also economically. And I think it'll be opportunity for the Azores and for those of us who live outside of the archipelago. So I think it's a great event and a great start to something that will kind of make it an institutional council that will be a voice for the Azoreans who live outside.
Okay, and again, that's perfect with the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute.
Well, yeah, we hope to have a voice in it as well. you know, it's going to be an elected official, and who knows, I may just run for it. We'll see.
There you go. Since we're talking about the Institute, you guys are holding many events, and you said you had a lecture series?
We are. Correct. We have our next one, October 14th. It's the president of the Luso American Development Foundation, FLAD, the entity that has helped us with these grants that put these events together. Her name is Rita Fadden. She was involved in many aspects of the Portuguese society, including being the chief of staff to the Portuguese prime minister for a few years. She will be talking about the Portugal, the European Union, and the transatlantic relations. So it's something that goes beyond, obviously, the Azores, and it involves basically something that I think would be interesting for people here, not just the Portuguese background, but all of those who have heard about the European Union. What is this European Union? So I think it'll be interesting. It'll be on the 14th, which is a Monday, free of charge, at 6 p.m. in the auditorium PB191 of the Peters Business Building. We have another lecture coming up on November 7th, so we'll talk about that later, which will be about Angra and the world. We'll talk about the era of the discoveries. We have one on December 5th. Also with a Fresno State alumnus, which is Sam Pereira, who is a poet who lives in the city of Los Banos, not too far from us, who is, I hope, listening to us. And Sam will be here on the 5th to share his poetry and his thoughts. He's an excellent poet, excellent. And then we have a couple of events, like, for example, on October 19th, we have a seminar for Portuguese language teachers to prepare all, not just language teachers, but to prepare any teacher who wants to know about the Portuguese oral history project, to prepare students so they can do their own oral histories of themselves, or, I mean, of their families, or of anyone they would like in the Portuguese American community. And on October 22nd, we have our very first community forum. It's at the Tulare Joint Union High School District Staff Development Room at 7 p.m., open to the public. And that is where PBBI, Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, will be talking about everything that's Portuguese at Fresno State and presenting the idea to the community and getting community involvement. So we're going to have these forums and talking about the Portuguese American Hour as well, in Tulare, in Los Banos, in Merced, in Madeira, in Kings County, different towns. So hopefully we will be having at least 5 to 6 of these forums in the next year or so. And there's also other events, just a curiosity if I can. For example, this Saturday, September 28th, there's a dinner in the Selma Portuguese Hall. A lot of our communities have a hall. Okay. Cost is $30, and it's for scholarships. So it's to give money to students so they can attend Fresno State. Mm-hmm. And on the 29th, the CPDS, it's another Portuguese hall here in the close Fresno area, in Easton, a community here next to Fresno. They're going to have a barbecue and chicken ribs, also money for the hall for their all their events from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there's some celebrations coming up for those of you who are Portuguese background or not Portuguese background. I want to see a little bit about what the culture is all about.
Yeah.
These are free of charge. There's October 5th and 6th, the Tulare Fatima celebration at the TDS Hall in Tulare. The Easton Fatima celebration, October 12th and 13th in Easton. And on Jefferson Street in Easton, CPDS Hall. And the Los Banos Fatima celebration on October 12th and 13th, also in Los Banos, and a little bit north of that, October 5th and 6th, also the Turlock Fatima celebration. So if you're in these areas and want to know a little bit about what Portuguese culture is all about, why not attend one of these events? They're all free of charge, and they usually have sopas or other kind of free lunches or dinners.
Those all great opportunities to learn more about the Portuguese culture, right, if you're interested. Or even like myself, I am Portuguese.
To reconnect, we're going to find out your family.
Definitely. That's something I've honestly always been interested in, and it just I've never thought I had, you know, the tools to be able to do that other than swabbing my mouth or something and sending it somewhere. But these are all events that are upcoming. You have had a few events already at Fresno State, correct? And
yes.
One of them I wanted to bring up was the student youth language, right?
We have one every year, so it's actually is already calendared for March 12th. The second week of March is Portuguese Immigrant Week in California. That was done by then-Governor Ronald Reagan in the 1960s, and every single governor has declared the second week every year, the second week of March is Portuguese Immigrant Week in California. So it's been kind of dormant for a while in different circles, but we've tried to revive it, us and other people throughout the state. And we had a Portuguese language youth day. So if you're a Portuguese student, basically, it doesn't make any difference what ethnicity you are. If you're taking Portuguese at one of the high schools, and there are three of them in Tulare that teach Portuguese, Los Banos, Hillmar, Turlock, two high schools, etc. So there's a few throughout the valley. We invite the high schools to bring their Portuguese language students. Last year we had over 300 students, actually about 350. They tour the campus. They hear a little bit about what we're doing with Portuguese. They hear about all these great projects at Fresno State. We have a linguiça sandwich luncheon for them. That's a typical Portuguese sausage. and then we have some dancing and some fun events. And so that was really very special this year, and it's already calendared to be repeated on March the 12th. Yes.
And then I also saw another one where you actually partnered with the College of the culinary students, couldn't think of the college name at Fresno State.
Right.
And actually brought in a chef from the Azores.
Yeah, that was special. That was in May. That was the beginning of May of this year. We had a Portuguese culinary experience. He came from the Azores, Chef Paulo Rocha and his two sous chefs, and they did a great job. We're hoping to do something similar, a little bit different this year. which will be, there's a young lady who is importing wines from Portuguese family wineries, not the big old wineries that exist in Portugal. Mm-hmm. Wine is very popular in Portugal, but from the local families. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna try to do some Portuguese wine and culinary tastes, hopefully sometime in April of this coming year. That was a big event for us. That was also a fundraiser to help some of the students who went to Portugal this year. We had 4 students from the Jordan College of Agricultural Science and Technology that went to the island of Terceira and did an internship, 1 month, in a Portuguese dairy company or ag company. Uh-huh. There were 4 Portuguese. 3 of them were not of Portuguese background. One of them was, his grandparents were immigrants. His parents were already born here. The other one was Hispanic. The other 2 Southeast Asians. And they had a wonderful experiencing not just, you know, college experience there, but also actually doing an internship and working in industry, in Portuguese industry, around the ag and around the dairy industry. And so that event in May with that Portuguese chef was a way for us to help fund those students.
Okay. And then, of course, you know, seeing as those are your first couple of events, hearing that turnout, I'm sure was a put a big smile on your face.
It did. It always. I always get leery the day before the events, wondering if people are going to show up. You know, we try to hit, you know, all the different platforms of advertising and getting the word out. But it's always tough, and I know people have busy lives, and mm-hmm. And students especially have also busy lives. But I had a good group of students. You know, we had about 20 students attend the last one, and that's good because we want to do this for the students, for the faculty, a good group of faculty as well, and for the community in general. I think if we can, you know, work this together, I think a university, in order to be a living entity, has to count on not just the faculty, not just its support staff, not just, of course, the students are the important part, that's why we're all there, but also outreach to the communities that compose this great mosaic, mm-hmm. which is the valley.
Yeah, I'd say so. We're going to wrap it up right there. We're out of time already. Just before we wrap up, anywhere specific anyone should follow? Like you said, you have your social medias, anything like that?
Yeah, we do have a Facebook page, Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. It's on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But basically, we use a little bit more Facebook, which is kind of, I know kids, students always tell me that's an old people platform, like me. But anyway, we do use that, and of course, the College of Arts and Humanities has a page dedicated to the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute on their website.
Okay, there you go. So if you want to reach out at all, anything like that, follow, that's where you got to go. This has been the Portuguese American Hour. On behalf of Dennis Borges, I am Justice Neves. Thank you for tuning in, and make sure you tune in next week.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.